Vijay Iyer, it is so good to see you, man.
Well, it's good to be here. It's a long time coming. We finally get to sit down together here.
Absolutely. You know, we've done a couple of things before, but today we are here live in Montreal, and you have a few performances that are coming up that I'm personally very excited to see.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm playing tonight solo and trio. I'm doing two separate concerts. Do you have the details offhand?
Yeah. We've got the details. Yes. I'll definitely be there.
Right. So, working on... Well, I just recorded a new solo album that'll be out in a couple months. And so I'm kind of test driving it in public here, some of that material, which will be nice. And I guess I get to play this nice Fazioli piano, which I don't get to do very often. And then tonight, afterwards, we're doing a set with the trio. This is my longtime collaborators, Stefan Crump and Marcus Gilmore, bass and drums, respectively. We made a trio album last year called Historicity, and we've worked together for years. So we're just surfing through our repertoire, basically.
Well, you've got quite a large repertoire, Morse, and that music happens to be one of my favorite discs, and you play in so many different configurations that we'll talk about in a second. But let's talk about the solo project right now. You know, when you're playing solo piano, it's basically you're playing a duet with space.
Exactly.
And and you don't have your trio or your quintet to rely on. So at the moment that you're playing or while you're playing, what is the thoughts that are firing off right after you depress your fingers on the keys in terms of the music and in terms of all the directions that you can go when you play? I mean, I know you don't sit and rehearse and just play the same thing every time. I know new sparks and new ideas, and there's plenty of space to go in those directions. So how do you take your dives into the music?
That's a good way to ask it. You know, I'm so used to collaborating and building things with other people. And in those, you know, when you have that opportunity, then there's always something in the music that's not you. So you have something to contrast with and something to work around and dialogue with. Yeah, and when you're playing by yourself, like you say, it's a dialogue with space or with time or with the instrument or your body or history, you know, all these different other elements. The dialogue is a bit more diffuse, you know, so you find a way to you have to find ways to crack it open. And part of it for me is like the challenge is finding a range, you know, like actually being able to have contrast in the music, so it's not all one thing, you know, because it's still all you, but what you have to kind of reach into different parts of yourself to create a range of sounds and a range of emotions and a range of possibilities. So I'm trying to deal with contrast like that. You know, it's good with piano because it's polyphonic, so you're always doing more than one thing at the same time, and so I try to build polyphonically, and I try to push the polyphony. I also just, you know, I build things around rhythms and polyrhythms, but I also just try to live in the moment. It's about, I mean, music is also and primarily about feeling, and that often dictates the flow of things.
Well, you speak about feeling, and I can imagine the feeling you get from, well, we're going to see, is this your first solo performance live?
No, I've done solo tours, and I've done quite a bit of performing.
Well, in terms of the energy of an audience when you have a trio or quintet, and the energy of an audience from a solo performance, those have to feel different in terms of when you're performing. And I know the audience and the energy of that atom is very important for the space and your thought and how you're thinking. So how does that affect you differently than when you're playing with other people in your band?
Well, you know, I try to shape the set in terms of the energy in the room, no matter whether it's by myself or with an ensemble. But I think the kinds of techniques I resort to or the kinds of options that are available are very different in a solo context. And it's just a more intimate affair, frankly. So it's just you and a room and a piano and the people around you who are sharing the experience. So it's, you know, you feel kind of like you're laid bare in a way. So there's nowhere to hide. And that's a good thing because it pushes you in a way that I feel like I end up kind of more in a certain adrenaline mode when I'm in a solo performance because it's, you know, there's so much focus and so much demand on the situation.
Keeps you honest.
For sure. Yeah. Well, there's nowhere to hide.
It's like being naked on stage.
It kind of is. It's your worst nightmare. Come true. Exactly.
Well, many people approach sound so differently. I know a lot of people in terms of doing the different standards and things of that nature, and even when they're doing their own recordings, it's a little, you know, some people end up playing the music like it's been played. Mm-hmm. And some people end up approaching it from all kind of different directions. And when I hear you play your music and I can hear how you think about music and I can hear your pathways into the music. So tell me about some of the different ways that you approach the concept of sound when you're recording or when you're playing or even when you have your thoughts about composing music.
Well, a lot of it's inspired by what's come before, you know. Certainly when I was making this solo album, I was thinking about the history of the piano and how the piano's been used. You know, how do you create polyphony and how do you create space and how do you create variety with this one instrument? So, you know, I looked in all kinds of directions. I looked at the Harlem Stride tradition and I looked at Chopin and Liszt and I looked at Messiaen and Ligeti and I looked at Cecil Taylor and, you know, that's all part of the piano landscape. Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk, and whatever this crazy sound is.
I was about to say, like the landscape we have right now.
That's right. That's right. You kind of have to deal with what's presented to you at the same time. And it's also about dealing with history in the sense of, you know, I'm in both of these albums, the solo album and the trio album, there are quite a few pieces that I did not compose, you know. And so there's always some kind of, there's an aura around a historical work. You know, like when you take a piece like Black and Tan Fantasy or a piece like Human Nature, these are both of those are on my album, my solo album. They have, in a way, they tell their own story before you even say anything. So then meanings get layered on top of each other, because what does it mean for me to be playing Black and Tan Fantasy or for me to be playing this Michael Jackson song? You know, what is my connection to that? And so then that gives you a new opportunity for storytelling, you know, and that, you know, people often ask, where is the story in improvised music or in jazz? What does that mean to when they tell you you're supposed to tell a story? What's the story, you know? And is the story in just how you string together notes in a solo, or is it where is it in the music? Is it in all these other hidden places, you know, like in the space in your dialogue with history and with the instrument and with yourself, you know? So that's, I try to think about it in those terms, you know. So sound, yes, but sound as a kind of a mechanism for expressing these deeper things.
Man, I'm so glad you said that. You said, what's the story? And when I hear music coming from all of these different artists, that's actually what I'm thinking. What is the story? Now, a lot of times you hear artists just playing the music. I'm like, well, you're playing the music, but you are not telling your story in relation to the music. And that's obviously something that you bring through in the music.
Well, you know, one thing I've learned a lot is I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of non-musicians in different collaborative contexts, you know, filmmakers, poets, theater artists, choreographers, activists, you know, people who are approaching music at this, you know, basically at the street level, you know, like they're not specialists in music. They're not thinking about it analytically. They're responding at the gut level to what is happening. And when you spend time kind of, especially after coming out of a sort of more analytical mode of making music, and then you spend time with those kinds of situations and you realize what music really is again. It's kind of like you reconnect with the truth about music, which is not, I mean, most musicians don't even know, honestly. I mean, most musicians don't ever have that chance to feel music from that other side, because it's almost like once you start learning how to, the nuts and bolts of the mechanics of the instrument and, you know, analyzing harmony and counting beats and stuff like that, then you kind of, you lose a certain, I don't want to say innocence, because it's more like you lose the emotional connection to, or the storytelling aspect of the music, which is, you know, at some level it has nothing to do with any of that stuff that we learn as musicians. It's more about what we learn as people from being around other people.
Well, in terms of this music that we all love so much, you have so many ways and dimensions talking about it yourself and presenting it. What part, all of these different parts of the music in the business, what part really gives you the most joy? Is it the conception you came up with? Is it recording? Is it like getting to the piano to write down a new thought? Is it performance? What gives you the most joy in the music?
I'd say performance, because that's when you really have that real-time connection with other people. That's what music is for. You know, I mean, if there's a reason that music exists in the world, it's for that purpose. It's to connect people. Participate in that kind of experience and you know, play for people all over the world and see how it works when people listen to music. I was talking about non-specialists, but also just, you know, people from different communities. In a way, it puts you in touch with some of these unities that we have, that we share, you know, these basic traits that we all share that cut across questions of difference, and, you know, ethnicity and nation and race and gender and stuff like that, that we get hung up on. It kind of just puts you back in contact with something deeper than that.
A universal a language, in a sense, which of course music is. But what's really absolutely has to be wonderful is to have a thought, turn that into music, share it with the world and your audiences, and then see that, man, that was something that just came to my head And now it's being played, and I'm playing it all over the world, and people love it just from my thoughts. I mean, as a jazz radio host, whatever, I don't get a chance to feel that feeling, but as the kind of art that I do, but as the kind of art that you do, that's really got to be something special.
It's a real privilege. And you know, I'm constantly reminded of what a privilege it is. You know, I mean, even when I'm on an airplane flying somewhere and I'm sitting next to somebody and they say, "Where are you? What are you doing?" And I say, "Well, I'm going to play a concert." And I say, "Really? You do that? That's what you do? That's your job?" And they, you know, usually you're sitting next to some working stiff or something, you know, maybe a white collared guy or something, but he's traveling on business, but it's not going to be a picnic for him.
Sure.
<you know? laughs> Right. I mean, not that being on tour is a picnic, but the thing is that the payoff is in performance, because that's when you have this authentic connection with people and with yourself, you know, and when you get to express something that's very personal and have it heard, you know, to be heard. I guess that's sort of such a privilege to be
your voice
to be listened to, you know,
right.
And especially when I think about the history of this music, it's the history of people refusing to be silenced and insisting on being heard, and against all odds, essentially. So,
Bill Jackson.
Indeed, that's right. So you know, the contingent nature of this music and the fact that it was able to happen in spite of all that, you know, that's kind of something that's so inspirational. And the fact that I get to participate in it is just, it feels like a bonus, really, for me. Every time I get to do it, it's not what I expected.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, here, tell me how it is being here at the Montreal Jazz Festival. If you've performed here before, and this is the biggest jazz festival in the world, so tell me about your two performances and how you feel about being here in Montreal.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here. This is my second time performing in this festival. The first time was, I think, maybe 7 years ago. I played in duo with Rudresh Mahanthapa, my longtime collaborator, and I'm just really, again, I'm just glad that I get to participate in this larger conversation about the past, present, and future of this music. Because in a way, you know, I don't want to say I stumbled into this music, but it took a while for me to realize that it was what I wanted to do. And then even longer to realize that I could do it. And then even longer still to actually get to do it. So I'm often just amazed that this is happening to me, and I'm just honored to be a part of the flow of things.
Man, we're honored to be a part of your flow, brother. Thank you, man, so
Thank
much.
You.
Appreciate it. Vijay Iyer. Na tum ta tum ta ka di mi ta tum tum ta ka di na tum ta ka di na tum ta tum tum ta ka di na tum ta ka di mi tangrit tangrit tum tum ta ka di na tum ta ka junu ta.